Kia ora, welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 336. Today is Friday, October 13th, 2017. Friday the 13th. And we're sort of lucky because at the moment we don't actually have a government here in New Zealand. We're still in a holding pattern waiting for the final negotiations to be completed, I suppose. I'll be talking about that first today and then some other bits and pieces. But first, about the elections. The elections were held on the 23rd of September, of course. And the result was that there was no clear winner. Neither the current party of leading government, the National Party, nor the party that I favor, the Labour Party, had enough seats to form a government. There were a lot of things that happened. There's a minor party called the Maori Party, which controlled one of the Maori electorate seats, and they were defeated in that seat, so they're out of parliament. That was one of the National Party's coalition partners. There's a party called United Future that had one MP called Peter Dunn, and I had said before that he dropped out, so that was gone. That only left them the one-party person for the so-called ACT Party, which National gave him a seat so that they would have a coalition partner, but even with him, that didn't give them a majority in Parliament. The Labour Party, on the other hand, got fewer seats, but together with the Greens, still didn't have enough seats in order to form government. And that left New Zealand First, headed by Winston Peters, to determine who forms government. And that's where we've been ever since. He decided to wait until the final vote results were announced on Saturday, the 2nd of October. And in that result, the Labour Party and the Green Party each picked up one seat, and the National Party lost two, which brought them much closer. And in fact, the parties that are not part of National's coalition have a clear majority of seats in Parliament. And put another way, that means a majority of New Zealanders voted for somebody other than National. So that's an important thing to keep in mind, first of all, that the majority of New Zealand voters did not vote for National. However, there has been a narrative in the media, because the media is dominated by conservative commentators and National Party supporters. I'm talking about commentators here, not journalists. The narrative has been that because National won the largest number of seats of any party, they should form government. Well, it doesn't work that way. The way it works is that whatever parties can put together a coalition have the right to form government if they can have a majority of seats in Parliament. Now, ideally, this will be a stable coalition and will last the three-year term, but that's not a requirement to form government. You don't have to be able to prove that you're going to last 3 years, because who can? Even the National Party, if they formed government, wouldn't be able to guarantee that they could last 3 years. So that's all a bit of a nonsense. And we also went through this frenzy where the conservative commentators were pushing the idea of a blue-green coalition, or sometimes they called it a teal coalition, which would have been the National Party and the Green Party. And there are innumerable reasons why that was impossible. It would never happen. Not the least of which is that the Green Party had spent 18 months campaigning on changing the government. They couldn't very well then turn around and say, oh, never mind, we're going to go with the people we were trying to kick out. That just wouldn't work. Their voters clearly expected them to be part of a new government and not to join National. And so that was the first barrier. Any coalition deal that the Greens sign has to be approved by 75% of some special committee or other. I don't really know what it is. And if they went back on what they promised in the campaign and what voters expected, there's no way it would get 75% approval. It just wouldn't happen. So it left them in an awkward position, because you had these conservative commentators all over the place, including former Prime Minister Jim Bolger, who was Prime Minister when I arrived in New Zealand 22 years ago nearly. He said that they should talk to National about forming a coalition. And I thought he was full of shit, to be honest. Because there is no moral mandate for National to form government, number one. And number two, there is no ethical way that the Greens could form coalition with National this year. Now, in future years, that's a whole different issue. If they campaign on being open to working with either Labour or National, that's an entirely different issue. But they didn't do that this time, and it would be betraying their voters if they did that, and they would be punished by the voters in 2020, the next elections, and probably be out of Parliament. And that is not the way to build a future of for their policies. Now, some of their supporters argue that they're actually neither left nor right, but green. It's something different. And there's an element of truth in that. They're not as left as some leftists think they are, but they're certainly not as right as some leftists think they are either. They're sort of all over the place. They tend to buy into the, I don't know, sort of establishmentarianism or whatever of the political system, that certain things are just taken for granted, that they work in certain ways. They're, for example, they're not out to destroy the dairy industry, even though it's our largest polluter. They want to reform it. They want to reduce intensity of dairy farming, but they're not out to destroy it. Now, some on the further, on what I often call the leftward side of left, meaning the further out on the left end of the spectrum, they would prefer to end dairying altogether. And that's just not going to happen. New Zealand is too dependent on dairying, and that's a non-starter. So in that sense, they're more conservative than some leftists would like, but they're also much more left than many conservatives would like. So, you know, swings and roundabouts. Now, in the fullness of time, a coalition between the Greens and National actually might be a good thing, because they could pull the National Party back towards focus on environmental issues. But I'm dubious that they would be able to have a whole lot of ability to do that. The National Party is, its strength is in the rural sector, the dairy sector in particular, farming in general, but the dairy sector in particular. They're not going to do anything that is going to harm, in quote marks, their base in any way. So I'm not really sure how much the Greens could actually influence a National-led government. Now, in the past, they did work with National, I think it was in 2008, that election or the one after, I can't remember, to get insulation into homes. The reason I'm hesitating is because the government was insulating state houses, which are owned by the government and rented to people based on a percentage of their income rather than market rates. But then also they wanted a program to help struggling Kiwis to insulate their homes, because as longtime listeners will remember, I've talked about, in the old days it was quite common to build houses in New Zealand that weren't insulated at all or poorly insulated. And over the decades, the insulation requirements have increased, so newer houses are well insulated, but old houses can often still be cold and drafty, and which has all sorts of health implications, among other things. So the Greens worked with National to try to get a program through to make it easier for people to insulate their homes. So that's the kind of thing they can do, but they weren't in coalition with National. They were in opposition. But things have gotten worse since then. The gap between rich and poor has grown dramatically over the past 9 years. We have a huge homeless problem and a huge housing problem, people being able to find affordable housing. And the dream of home ownership is getting further and further away for young people, all sorts of things like that, and in addition to environmental problems. And enabling that government to continue just would be a non-starter for the Greens. Which brings us back to Winston. Winston has never been a fan of the Green Party, I think it's safe to say. But he dislikes the ACT Party, and I'm putting quote marks around party again, intensely. And one of his requirements for doing a deal with the National Party is that ACT would not be part of government. And they were told that right up front, they wouldn't be part of government. And I think that's a good thing. The ACT Party, among other things, is responsible for charter schools, which have not worked well in New Zealand, as they generally don't. And they are also responsible for the so-called super city here in Auckland. Although I think amalgamation of one sort or another was probably inevitable, the structure that they came up with, which was more dictatorial than we had a royal commission on the governance of Auckland, and the royal commission had whole bunch of recommendations that ACT ignored at the time. Their MP was Rodney Hyde when they drew up the thing, and they actually wanted to make it less democratic than it ended up being. So ACT has done nothing good for New Zealand, in my opinion. And so keeping them out of government is a good thing. But Winston is all over the show in his ideology. And during the course of the negotiations with both National and Labour, we found that he cares about foreign ownership, particularly of productive farmland, but also even of housing. And that aligns more closely with Labour than it does with the National Party, which doesn't want any restrictions on foreign ownership. The New Zealand First, or Winston, also want dramatic cuts to immigration levels. And I mean dramatic. They want a maximum of 10,000 people. That doesn't jive with anybody except the Opportunities Party, which didn't make it into Parliament, fortunately. It is more in line with Labour, because Labour wants to cut back on immigration and put more restrictions on who is allowed to migrate here. The National Party hasn't really said how they would change immigration. They've talked about reforming it a bit, but the economic growth over the past 9 years has been built on the backs of immigrants. They've allowed these waves of record waves of migrants to come to New Zealand to live in order to fuel the economy, because it was just not coming back from the global financial crisis. And dairy sector was lagging, the manufacturing sector was lagging, all those sorts of things. So the economic growth has been largely because of immigration. But on the other hand, that's also created huge problems. The soaring price of houses, for example, housing, and congestion on the roads and all kinds of other issues have been made worse by virtually uncontrolled immigration. So I think most parties agree that there has, except for National and ACT, agree that there has to be a more sensible approach to immigration than we've had over the past 9 years. Winston and New Zealand First are going really far in the other direction. Labour, not quite that far. But again, Winston is closer to Labour than he is to National on those issues. Now, there may be other issues where he's closer to National and we just haven't heard them talked about by him or others. I don't know. And some pundits are now trying to say that a National-Winston deal looks more likely. I'm dubious about that. I'm still thinking he's more likely to come up with an arrangement where he will support Labour and the Greens forming government and sit on the crossbenches, or he will sit he'll have a confidence and supply agreement. Confidence means basically that the House, our Parliament is one House, it's called the House of Representatives, that the House agrees that these people can continue in government. Supply is money, the budget in particular, but also anything that comes along after that can be a supply issue. And if you guarantee confidence and supply, the government won't fall. If you don't guarantee confidence and supply, the government could fall at any time. And that means we probably go back to new elections. Although National could have the opportunity then to, assuming that he gives confidence and supply to Labour and Greens here, National could have the opportunity to try to form government with Winston then and go the rest of the term. But if not, then we would go back to the polls and have a new election. That's the way it works in parliamentary democracies. So there's a lot of options, but one option is to go into formal coalition with either National or Labour and the Greens. Second option is to sit out of coalition, but give a guarantee of confidence and supply to either National or Labour and the Greens, probably in exchange for some cabinet positions for his MPs, possibly for certainly for policy concessions of one sort or another. And possibly, Winston said, maybe there are areas where they could develop new policy together, which figures. And the third option is to do what's called sit on the crossbenches, which means neither opposition nor government, and every single issue becomes potentially a confidence and supply issue, and it's decided on an issue-by-issue basis. Now, that particular one holds the whole country to hostage, because every single vote that's taken, whoever leads government has to go to Winston and see if he's okay with it. Because if he isn't, then they either can't get it through Parliament and they have to pull it, or it goes through, it fails, and then the government falls. So I don't think that that's going to work. I just don't see that as a goer. I think that he will give confidence and supply to somebody and sit outside of the actual government and have some MP. You can have ministers who are not part of government, if this makes any sense. This is getting confusing, I know, and I apologize for that, but it is confusing. It is complicated. In 2005, he did exactly that. The Labour Party and the Progressive Party formed government, and the United Future guy, Peter Dunn, and Winston both sat outside of government and were ministers outside of cabinet. The cabinet is made up of the senior ministers who run various departments. the important ones in particular. Some of the more minor ministers are outside of cabinet, especially the associate ministers and stuff are not in cabinet. The cabinet meets regularly with the prime minister and to decide what they're going to do and foreign policy and all that sort of stuff. And he did that in 2005. He was foreign minister in 2005 outside of cabinet. That hadn't happened before, but he actually was quite good at it. And it worked really well. So there's no reason why something like that couldn't work again. He may not be happy with that idea, however. I don't know. I don't know what he wants. The speculation is that he is concerned about his legacy. He's in his 70s now. This is probably his last election. And he's concerned about ensuring a future for his party so that he has a legacy to leave behind. So that's why I don't think he'll sit on the crossbenches. Because if he holds the country to ransom on every single issue, he will be punished in the next election. His party will be destroyed again. He'll be kicked out of parliament again. And that's also the reason why I think he's least likely to go with National. Because the National has been in power for 9 years. A lot of people really don't like it. As I said, more New Zealanders voted against National than for National. So propping up National for a fourth term would be a pretty unpopular, it's a risky move, because if anything goes wrong or National doesn't clean up its act and start caring about ordinary New Zealanders, then again, Winston and New Zealand First would be punished in the at the next election. And if he's concerned about his parliament, his future and his legacy and all those sorts of things, then doing anything that's going to destroy his party in parliament is not the best way to do that. So the most logical way for him forward would be to enable a change of government by one way or another, allowing Labour and Greens to form government. And as I said earlier, I think his most likely thing to do will be to give confidence and supply to Labour and the Greens and to perhaps have some positions for himself or for other New Zealand First MPs outside of cabinet. And if he goes with National, it'll be a similar sort of arrangement. I just cannot see him wanting to be in coalition with either, because it would dilute his party brand and make it more likely that he and his party would be thrown out of parliament. And I forgot to say too that there are two issues that make him very unlikely to go with National. The first is that during the campaign, somebody somewhere in the National Party is the most likely culprit for having released information to the media that Winston had been overpaid for his national superannuation, which is like Social Security, it's retirement income. And he had already talked to the government about that and had paid back the money he was overpaid. So this was actually not an actual story, but they were shopping it around as if it's this big scandal for Winston. And the only people who knew about it were people in the department, and an internal investigation cleared them. And the only other people who knew were certain senior National Party government officials, certain ministers, the deputy prime minister, and certain other ministers, and the chief of staff for the prime minister. And if they didn't release it, and they all deny that they did, then they must have told somebody who did. I mean, that's the only logical conclusion. I don't know that for a fact. I am speculating, merely speculating. But it is my sincerely held belief, because the leak had to come from somewhere, and that's the most likely scenario. So Winston wouldn't be happy about that. And he also, he was the MP for Northland in a special election, which you may recall I talked about, and the National Party ran hard to defeat him in that electorate, and they did. He's now just a list MP again. I should say just a list, but he is a list MP again. And the reason all that matters is because Winston has a history of, well, basically revenge. And if he's upset with National for having done these two things to him, it makes him less likely to go with National. On the other hand, he loves being in the limelight, and he may find that more attractive. I don't know. But on balance, I still think he's most likely to, one way or another, support a Labour-Greens government. But the truth is, my opinion, my belief or whatever, is no better or worse than anybody else's. None of us know what's going to happen, and that's why we're still waiting. Actually, we're also still waiting for spring, which hasn't arrived yet. It's been very cool the past few days, even cold. And today it's raining again and cold and pretty miserable out there. And hopefully we will get spring at some point. The weather guy on TVNZ the other day was talking about the likelihood of summer, or what our summer is going to be like. And there's every possibility it will be cool and rainy as well. Oh, great, you know. Tropical cyclone season starts on November 1st and runs into the end of April, I think it is. Our cyclones are like hurricanes in the Northern Hemisphere, but ours don't get as severe as hurricanes do. I don't know why, but they just don't. And New Zealand hasn't had a direct hit from a cyclone since the 80s, I think it is. We've had some near misses, I guess, and some tail ends of some cyclones, but we actually haven't been hit by any. And at this point, there's no reason to think we will be this year either, but, you know, stay tuned. That may be something I'll be talking about over the coming months as well. Who knows? And apart from that, there's actually not a whole lot of new stuff to talk about. Yesterday was the 100th anniversary of the disaster at Passchendaele in World War I, and there were ceremonies and remembrances that day and more today. And I actually don't have anything I can say about that. I've thought about it, and it's something that I don't personally have any connection to as an American, because the U.S. wasn't even in the war, in that battle, or in the war even at that point. So I don't have any ancestral or personal ties or even feelings about it, except that it was an utter disaster. More New Zealanders died on that day than at any point during the First World War. But it's something that even a lot of Kiwis don't know about, because so much emphasis has been placed on Gallipoli. And Anzac Day, which is in April, is based around the remembrance of the Gallipoli landing and the disaster that was. And a lot of New Zealanders don't really know about it. They've heard about it, certainly, but they don't really know a whole lot about it. And I'll put some links in the show notes to this if you want to read more about it, because it was really a terrible thing. And I don't know how to approach it as an immigrant. I don't know how to approach it. I mean, I can feel really bad for the disaster that it was, and war is especially the First World War, was so futile and so pointless and so unnecessary. And intellectually, I know that, and emotionally and all that, but I just don't know how to relate to it as somebody who's not from this country and who doesn't have any ancestral connection to the battle that's being remembered. It's a very strange feeling to have, and sort of an odd position to be in. To be able to understand something, to be able to feel for the loss and the tragedy and all that, and yet not be connected to it in any personal way. The Gallipoli Remembrance, Anzac Day and all that, is much easier to connect to as a foreigner, because the whole country embraces it, and that could be what the difference is. That the remembrance of the disaster of Passchendaele is not something that most people do. But yeah, I don't know. It's just an odd place to be in as an immigrant. But other than that, you know, life goes on, and we hopefully one day we'll get spring. Labor Day is coming up a week from Monday, so whatever that is, the 20 something or other. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. I can't remember. And so that's a 3-day holiday. It's the first one of summer. Well, not summer, but you know what I mean. The warmer month seasons, because we've got that. And we've got Christmas and Boxing Day, and then New Year's Day and the day after, and then Anniversary Day, and then Waitangi Day. And I think that's pretty much it then for the warm months. In fact, I don't know when Easter is this year, actually. Oh, well, doesn't matter. I'll talk about that when that time comes. But that is it from New Zealand, which is on pause at the moment, as we still wait for the government. Oh, I forgot to say about that. It has to go to the board of New Zealand first, and once it does, they have to ratify any coalition agreement, and Winston now says it will be at the end of next week. But that's it for today and this week. I'll talk to you soon. Ka kite anō. Bye.
You can comment on this or any other episode of the Amerinds Podcast at amerindspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can send me an audio message through Audioboo or Skype, where my username is Amerinds, and you can email me, with or without a voice message, at Arthur, that's ARTHUR, at amerindspodcast.com. This podcast is recorded and distributed under a Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.